Hello and all, welcome to Mark Langdon's Bet Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. My goodness, it's a busy schedule at the moment, isn't it? Premier League action to look back on, to look forward to, and of course, we'll be catching up with Dan Childs for all things EFL. Mark, he must be out of breath at the moment. Spurs 3-2, so much to cover. We've got the African Cup of Nations going on, the Asia Cup. You're busy at the moment.
I even managed to stick in a Guardian Football Weekly shift yesterday morning as well. Where
was that your warm up for this? Was it?
Yeah, the main topic of discussion was steak, so it was all right. you come for the football and stay for the steak. A busy time at the moment, and I think the sort of funniest thing was that I got three messages within about 5 seconds of each other, when South Korea looked like they were going out of the Asian Cup, all from people, and then they equalised, didn't they, in like the 100th minute. And three messages from different people going, oh no, we thought we were getting some back, and it's not to be. He's got to stay out there for another week. But yeah, dramatic stuff in the Africa Cup of Nations as well. The recent post tip was Ivory Coast. I mean, it's a Lazarus-like recovery from them. They've managed to still stick around. My boys, Algeria, have long gone, and so have most of the favourites. It was an incredible stat. It was Daniel Story from The Independent said that the eight teams that are in the quarterfinals are completely different to the eight teams in the last AFCON quarterfinal.
Really?
So, it's been turned on its head, that competition, which is always good to see. So, yeah, and a great midweek round, I thought, of Premier League action as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was plenty to get through and some really kind of surprise results in there as well. We'll get onto them later on in the show when we discuss this weekend's games. Members Club is now available on the Racing Post app. All Members Club subscribers can now access premium news and tips anytime, anywhere. Plus, if you're not already a member, you'll get 50% off your first 3 months. If you haven't already subscribed yet and want to join the greatest club in racing, simply visit racingpost.com/subscribe. We might as well get straight into the action, Mark, and start with our big match. It looks a cracker. It's Arsenal against Liverpool. It's Sunday. It's 4:30, 11-10 Arsenal, 13-5 the draw, Liverpool 19-10. Let's start with Liverpool, Mark. It's been an interesting week for them. The news last Friday that Jurgen Klopp will be leaving the football club come the end of this season. He put it down to kind of exhaustion and doesn't feel like he can continue to the standards that he's set so far. Of course, it opens up the discussion around who the next head coach will be. But for me, the most impressive thing is their two performances since that news. The FA Cup win against Norwich City, the Premier League win against Chelsea. They look like they've stepped up a level.
Yeah, I agree. That performance against Chelsea was as good as, I think, anything I've seen Liverpool sort of serve up. I wasn't watching the whole game because I was my eyes were distracted by the football/darts match that was going on at White Hart Lane between Spurs and Brentford. But sort of the bits that I did see live and then of the highlights, I mean, and when you go back over the stats, I mean, it's about as good as Liverpool can serve up, I think. And rather than be dragged down by Klopp's departure or using that as, departure at the end of the season, to use that as an excuse, rather than that, it's been an inspiration almost that the fans realise that they've only got a few months left with Klopp, the players the same, and they're determined to go out with as big a bang as possible, still on for four trophies. The biggest, I think, and most important for them would be winning a Premier League with fans back inside the stadium. Obviously, the one they did win was during lockdown, and it wasn't quite the same for them. And it was unfortunate the way that developed. And yeah, they're playing like they think they can do it. And maybe Manchester City have got other things to think about that. But they were just all over Chelsea, and probably should have had a penalty Chelsea than Nkunku won, but I didn't think the Gallagher one was a definite spot kick. And you know, throughout the game, they were just, as Pochettino said himself after the game, they were just beaten by a better team. So many good performances all over the pitch. Someone like Conor Bradley, just fantastic, really. Alexander-Arnold eat your heart out in the sort of right-back slot. Gomez, left-back, seems to be very comfortable now in that position. This Liverpool 2.0 midfield is working well. And up front, Salah, obviously not available at the moment. First due to AFCON, he's also injured. And again, didn't miss him. So they really are sort of putting down a serious mark. And this is another tough game they've got against Arsenal. Make no mistake about that. You know, this is not an easy trip to the Emirates. I think it'll be more difficult than even when they won in the FA Cup there. It's an interesting time, isn't it? Because if they get 6 points from Chelsea and Arsenal, that really would set them up beautifully going into these sort of final few months.
Absolutely. But before we look at this time kind of isolation, Mark, who are you? I guess just put yourself in the shoes of a Liverpool fan, and Klopp's obviously more than the kind of football he plays. He encompasses that city. Looking at the shortlist, you've got Xabi Alonso's clear favourite. Would he be the man for you?
Am I a Liverpool fan or the sort of Liverpool sporting director who would...
You're a Liverpool fan and you're wanting your club to continue in a similar path.
I think if you're a Liverpool fan, I think you do want Xabi Alonso. He's got the connection with the club. Yeah, he's doing well with Bayer Leverkusen. So that's the answer if I'm a Liverpool supporter, which I'm not. I have some reservations about Xabi Alonso, not in terms of the fact that he can't go on and become a great manager, but following Klopp, whoever follows Klopp is really, it's a difficult one.
Well, he's irreplaceable, isn't he, to an extent?
Yeah, he is. And, you know, what he's done in terms of, you know, he's won the absolute lot with Liverpool, in, you know, the Liverpool fans in the city's kind of carried the city at times. He speaks very well on sort of the impact of social events, and he's done exactly the same thing at Dortmund as well, you know, a kind of working class city, and connected the fans to the football club, and then, you know, the rest of it doesn't take care of itself, but it almost feels like it does. You know, and he just gets so many things right at every level. Like, I don't think there is anyone out there actually that could do that. That's, you know, you take Pep Guardiola as the sort of person that might, in a different way. He's not obviously going to go from Man City to Liverpool. So realistically, there's nobody that's going to be able to do that. And Alonso would be coming into this with not much experience and just none at a really big club, Bayer Leverkusen. Their fans are just nowhere near as demanding or as passionate as the Liverpool ones. And I don't know. I understand why he's the odds-on favourite, and it feels like a natural fit in many regards. But I do think knowing the club, actually, if I'm looking at it from the outside, I think it's overrated, sort of that knowing the club, in inverted commas. What does that actually mean? As a supporter, it's what we want, isn't it? We want somebody to know the club. But that doesn't necessarily need to be somebody that that has actually been at the club previously. I can speak from first-hand experience, say, of Ange Postecoglou. He's never managed at Tottenham before, but when he came in, he kind of made that immediate connection with himself and the supporters and the football team, and sort of brought everything together very quickly. So you can do that without having played as brilliantly for the football team as what Xabi Alonso did, as an example. And I think that someone like Nagelsmann, if we're just looking at it sort of quite harshly, has done more than what Xabi Alonso has managed so far. And he has managed a big club at Bayern Munich, and they sacked him, and they haven't got any better under Thomas Tuchel. So the idea that he was doing a bad job at Bayern just doesn't ring true.
Would the worry with Nagelsmann be that he's never really stuck around somewhere for too long? And I guess, you know, coming in after Klopp, you know, what Klopp has built, you you probably want someone to stick around for a while and again build a bit of a legacy.
I'm not sure. I don't know if there might have to be just a few kind of a few people in and out. I'm not sure. You can't guarantee that you know that next appointment's going to be there for 5 or 6 years, even if it is Alonso. If he does, you know, say it is Alonso, if he does badly, they'll have to sack him. You know, they won't just be able to go, oh well, you know, this is a 5-year plan. You know, they'll just have to do. You know, when Arsenal replaced Wenger, they weren't thinking, oh well, you know, the next appointment's going to, you know, not work out for them. You go into every appointment thinking that they're going to last long term, but most of them don't. You know, Manchester United are a prime example of that. So I think with Nagelsmann, you know, the reason he didn't stay at Hoffenheim and Leipzig very long was because he quickly outgrew sort of what they were. And then Bayern Munich, he was sacked at Bayern Munich, and I think most people would have thought that was really harsh to have sacked him. And he's now become the German national team manager, and obviously didn't want to lock himself down into that for too long. I mean, you know, he's way too young to be an international manager for, you know, the next 10 years or whatever. The opportunity came up to manage your home country in a Euro. So, you know, why would you not do it if you're out of work? But I think he'll get a top job sooner rather than later. And I'm just saying that, yeah, if you compare him and Alonso to actually what they've done, I think you would say that Nagelsmann has done more. De Zerbi, I think, would be an interesting choice because I think his character... I could just imagine him blowing up like every other week at Liverpool. And I think his football would be well suited, but I'm not sure about his kind of demeanour. Amorim at Sporting is being given, he's been the one that's sort of come in for money in recent days. I mean, he's highly rated in Portugal, might be a kind of sensible choice. He, again, I think has probably done more than Alonso so far. But it's just that Alonso speaks well. He had that kind of background, Benitez, Mourinho, Guardiola, sort of takes, you know, he's been able to sort of absorb all of that information and be his own person, won absolutely everything as a player, classy individual. I can see why the attraction is there for him. I'm just saying, if you actually put it down in black and white, I think there are probably managers that might be ahead of him just in terms of what they've done so far.
Yeah, I think the fact that we've discussed that for so long kind of proves the fact that there's not the perfect replacement and that Klopp is so difficult to replace. Just in terms of this game then, Mark, it is a huge game near the top of the table. How are you playing it in terms of your bet?
Yeah, I mean, Mikel Arteta, you know, I think there's some people that go, well, he's a bit like Alonso in many respects, that you sort of... As Arsenal fans, they just want him to do well, don't they? Because he's got that connection with the club and it sort of feels right. And I think, you know, the way that he's kind of worked Arsenal into this position where they are challenging for the Premier League, and it's now seen as a kind of step backwards that they're not top of the table, shows how well he's actually done to get them back into challenging for the top spots. I'm going to go for a draw in this game. So Liverpool away to the top teams, drew at Man City, they drew at Brighton, they drew at Chelsea. I know Chelsea, you know, league position wise, and not considered a top team, but I still think that, you know, it's a difficult away game. They had the late loss at Tottenham and the late win at Newcastle in very dramatic circumstances. So I haven't tended to win too many of these games. They won at Arsenal in the FA Cup, but even then, you know, Arsenal were the better team, weren't they, for a good hour of that game, certainly first half anyway. And then I looked at Arsenal. They've only won once against the top seven themselves this season. So I'm not sure if either team actually would settle for a point, but I definitely wouldn't be surprised if it was a draw.
Just teasing ahead to later, Mark. I know you like sort of a player shot on target type angle in it. Are we looking at Nunes sort of over 15 and a half shots or something?
Yeah, he had 10, didn't he, against Chelsea. What a player. I absolutely love him.
So good. Let's get on to the rest of the action. The early kickoff on Saturday, Everton against Spurs. Everton 15-8, 5-2 the draw, 7-5 Spurs. They put you through it a little bit on Wednesday evening, didn't they, Mark?
Yeah, got dragged down by Brentford in the first half in terms of, you know, just got too frustrated with the slow set pieces and Mopay doing the James Maddison darts celebration.
I'm so glad you've finally seen the light, Mark, because when we started this podcast a couple of years ago, you were all over Brentford. You couldn't say a bad word about them. They were the next big thing, and now you're seeing them for what they are.
They are a team that play on the limits, don't they? They kind of push the boundaries, I think. But I don't mind it. Postecoglou said after the game that it was Tottenham's fault, really, for just not playing their own game and thinking too much about moaning to the referee and, you know, just play football. And in the second half, for 10, 15 minutes, they did, and they absolutely dazzled Spurs. And then touch nervy at the end, but, you know, it was job done. I'm going to go for Tottenham draw no bet in this game around about 4-5. And it's more a sort of anti-Everton selection, this one, really, because only one win in nine for the Toffees. They've only scored two goals in their last six games. And you look to their team selection against Fulham in midweek, Jack, for that 0-0, which was an amazing game. There were over 40 shots in the game. But Everton were not like a Sean Dyche team. And I think it's because Idrissa Gueye, Onana and Decore all out. And so James Garner was sort of the only normal kind of natural midfielder in there. Now, there's a suggestion that Onana could be back for this game, but I'm just not sort of confident anymore about Everton. A couple of months ago, I felt like they were on an upward curve, but Calvert-Lewin's not scoring goals. And, you know, to only score two goals in six games is a concern when you're up against the Tottenham team that scored in every Premier League game so far this season. You know, what's it, in about the last 40 games, I think it's only Man City that have stopped them scoring. So you can see Tottenham scoring. And do I see Everton sort of getting two or more? Probably not.
OK, let's move on to the 3 o'clock games on Saturday. We'll start with Brighton against Palace, 4-6 Brighton. 3-1 the draw, 17-4 Palace. We spoke about De Zerbi, the potential of sort of blowing up every other week. I mean, what on earth happened with Brighton in midweek? Just an astonishing result against Luton.
Oh, it really was. You know, to be put 2-0 down inside 3 minutes. And actually, there was still the best part of 90 minutes to come back in that game. And I think that Brighton at full tilt would have fancied their chances even 2 goals down to come back into it, but well beat on the night. It can happen to De Zerbi. The way that his team play is aggressive, and when it goes wrong, it goes badly wrong. They are struggling for Premier League wins, aren't they? Was it three in the last 16 games now? I think that's a slightly harsh statistic, though, to throw at Brighton, because you're almost saying, well, yeah, but I'm just not going to count all the progress you've made in Europe and the FA Cup. And, you know, that's not right, is it? I mean, I think Brighton are concentrating more on the cup competitions this season, and that has impacted their league form, but also the injuries that they've had. And Joao Pedro went off at Kenilworth Road. We don't know yet if that was just a precautionary one where they felt the game had gotten away from them, so no point risking him. But obviously, this is a not a derby, you know. I don't like to call them sort of these games a grudge match. You know, the two teams don't like each other. I'm going to go for the draw. Last 14 meetings, only one of those games was there more than one goal in it between Brighton and Palace. 7 of those 14 were draws. Palace, a team, once they've got Eze and Olise back, like they did for that comeback win against Sheffield United, are able to carry a bigger attacking threat, and that gives them a chance of getting something from this game.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Burnley against Fulham, 2-1 the home side, 23-10 the draw, 11-8 Fulham. Burnley have no real chance in midweek. Can they bounce back here?
Well, you just feel for the people that were on, say, Man City to win to nil in that game. And Burnley's XG was healthy at the Etihad, so I think Vincent Kompany will take that, from the trip. But it was over, really, wasn't it, from the moment Alvarez scored early. You just kind of knew the outcome of that game. This is a much more winnable fixture for Burnley. I'm going to go for over 2.5 goals, though, because Fields must win for Burnley. If this was April, you would definitely be saying, oh, you know, they've got to win this game. They've got to win it. Like, we're in February now, and it sort of, you know, will be one of them games that they have to target, so they're going to have to go positively. Fulham, not a team you can trust away from home. 6 defeats in 7. But as I mentioned earlier, there were over 40 shots in that 0-0 against Everton. So if we can get anything like that kind of number again, I think the overs becomes much more of a runner.
Okay, Newcastle against Luton, 2-5. Newcastle 7-2. The draw 6-1. Luton, a good result in midweek for Newcastle. Are they back?
I think they are more like themselves. You know, playing once a week helps, so they're fresher. You're not having to keep on going back to back midweeks with the same 11 players. I was never overly concerned about sort of the direction Newcastle were heading in, just realistic to what they could do with the squad that they had while they were in the Champions League and fighting on so many fronts. I think this is a much more manageable workload. I do want to give a proper shout out to Luton, because they've given themselves a realistic chance of staying up, and yeah, not many people would have had that down as a possibility at the start of February. They have got a lot of hard away games still to play, including this one to St James's. On the kind of flip side of that, most of the teams down the bottom have got to go to Kenilworth Road, and none of them are going to enjoy it. I think they've found a way to play Luton. Lokonga and Barkley in midfield have given them much more control than what they had when they first came up. Not spent crazy money, but they've spent it wisely, and those two are definitely had an impact. I mean, this is a game Newcastle should win, though. I think Kenilworth Road and playing away from home, two different beasts, really, for as far as Luton are concerned. The way I was looking at playing it was Anthony Gordon, 7-1, first goal scorer. Isak went off injured against Villa, and Gordon went through the middle, carried a threat when he was playing there and out wide. He's got a healthy 7 goals already this season. So, he could strike again. Is he one of those looking to make a late run at an England call-up?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, credit to Luton. We said it earlier on in the season, didn't we, that the fact that they've got that skill to just remain in games is so crucial, because, you know, I've sadly watched my team at the bottom of the Premier League table so often, and it's the games where they're over in 10 minutes and you're chasing shadows for 80. They're the ones that kill you off. And the fact that Luton have remained in games and then after the midweek, you know, have excelled in games is so mightily impressive. So
from a betting point of view, Jack, like, they've never been considered this absolutely hopeless, hapless team that kind of painted from, I don't know, I'll call it normal sort of football media, because it just hasn't been like that, you know. That they've been getting full respect from betting markets, even if they haven't from other sources.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, credit to them. Sheffield United Villa is the evening game on Saturday. 17-4 Sheffield United, 16-5 the draw, 3-5 Villa. If we speak about must win games for Burnley, surely this is one of them for Sheffield United, isn't it?
It is, but I think it's a lost cause for Sheffield United. Chris Wilder's come in. I think they've been aggressive. There's no doubt about that. That they are trying to play more on the front foot. They've been 27 goals in their 6 matches since Christmas. And, you know, Berrettan Diaz, what a goal he scored, by the way, at Selhurst Park. So, a quality player. But they just concede way too many goals. Because they're now starting to push forward, and because they need to win games, it leaves them exposed in their back third. Gerbich came in goal, conceded 2 long range ones, and I'm not sure what he was doing for that first one, really, when Eze just extended his foot out. But he's definitely better than Fodderingham, who had some sort of shocking moments as well. I'm going to go for Aston Villa to win and over 2.5 goals. No doubt that Villa are wobbling. at the moment. This is easier than some of their more recent games. And you say must win for Sheffield United. I mean, it's not must win for Villa in their sort of top four push, but they'll be putting pressure on themselves to feel like it's a game they should be winning. I think they can win it. Like I say, though, their high line, I always felt like you should just be able to beat that high line that they've got. Yeah. And it was bamboozled by how many teams were being bamboozled and just continually getting offside. Newcastle found the path to success. Run from deep, run from wide, be patient. And, you know, I'm not saying Sheffield United will definitely be able to do that, but they will. The way that Villa play, they do give you, you know, those opportunities. And so that's why I fancy a few goals, but Villa should be too good for Sheffield.
I'm so glad you doubled up on the use of bamboozled there. That's such a good word.
Yeah, I do like it as a word. Yeah.
Sunday games. Let's move on to that then. 2 o'clock, Bournemouth against Forest, 7-10, the home side. 3-1, the draw, 7-2 about Nottingham Forest. You like Bournemouth at the start of the season. They were slow starters, but well in their groove now.
Yeah, they are. Obviously, we're speaking before their game on Thursday, trip to West Ham. I'm going to go for the draw in this game because I don't think 1 day extra rest is huge, but 2 days, particularly for teams that are not used to it, feels like a handicap that might, you know, harm the Cherries for this game. Forest, of course, played on the Tuesday night. They were well beat by Arsenal. I know they only lost 2-1 in the end, but I thought it was very comfortable for the Gunners. The positive, though, there for Forrest was a one-year coming back, scored again. Chris Wood has done well in his absence in recent times, but a one-year's different class, I think, to what else they've got in that position, and that gives them a chance of getting a point. Like I say, I think 8-11, Bournemouth, if they were playing kind of, on the back of a free week, I'd fancy them, but I can pass them over given that Thursday-Sunday turnaround that we've seen catch teams out previously.
Yeah, OK. Chelsea against Wolves, 8-13. Chelsea 3-1, the draw, 9-2. Wolves, I haven't watched loads of Chelsea this season, Mark, but the times I have, I've just been so uninspired. And it was the same again in the midweek. I know Liverpool were great and they were relentless, and it's so difficult to play against them when they're like that. But Chelsea didn't lay a glove. It was deeply uninspiring.
Yeah, you know, at some stage, you're going to have to start questioning Pochettino, aren't we? Yeah. Obviously, the Cups, I think, are where it's at for Chelsea this season. And their results look better on paper. But if you delve deeper, like Middlesbrough went to Stamford Bridge missing what looked like an entire team, wasn't it? They had so many players out. You know, they beat Preston in the FA Cup. I mean, you know, Preston are a bang average championship side. They weren't able to sort of get past Aston Villa at the first attempt to beat Crystal Palace at home, but they probably should be beating Crystal Palace at home. So, yeah, I think they're still a difficult team to trust, really, Chelsea. So, Wolves or draw double chance is the way I'm going to go for this one. Only one defeat in 10 for Wolves at the time of speaking. They play Manchester United later on Thursday night. That one bad result, and it was a bad performance as well, was away to West Ham. The reserve goalkeeper, Bentley, didn't cover himself in glory on that occasion. So I think there was probably a fair enough excuse there. Yeah, it's just difficult to trust Chelsea, isn't it, at sort of short prices.
Yeah, absolutely. If Chelsea are difficult to trust, then I'd probably put Manchester United in that category as well. They take on West Ham this weekend. 3-4 United, 3-1 the draw, 16-5 West Ham. Yet to see both of these in action this midweek time of recording. Mark, how do you see this one going?
Sure. I thought Manchester United at 4-5 was okay. It sort of feels to me as if all the negativity about United is sort of influencing the prices to some extent. I mean, West Ham are sixth in the, in terms of the Premier League.
Yeah.
In terms of points, but they're bottom half on expected points, and their XG goal difference, which is something that I sort of would probably follow more than expected points. They're only four teams worse than West Ham, actually, in the league than that. So some of that will be down to style of play. You know, we know that David Moyes isn't that interested in possession and, you know, creating chances even. He just likes to keep it tight, set pieces and, you know, see what they can do on the break. But I think when you play like that, you need all of your individual stars to kind of be able to conjure up the magic. And they've had that with Bowen and they've got it with Kudos, so he'll be back to be able to play in the game. Pakatar being out injured, I think, is a massive blow for the Hammers. And Manchester United, as long as more of their players don't spend the midweek in Belfast nightclubs.
We've all done it, Mark. We've all done it.
Well, yeah, just without the private jet. And we make it. Yeah, the thing is, Jack, we've all done it, but we show up for work the next day.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're going to go out on a school night, make sure you turn up for work, even if you have got, a kind of red eye and you're not 100%, you show up for work.
And I think many would agree, Mark, that our job is far more demanding than playing for Manchester United, isn't it?
I mean, what would Manchester United have been doing on that Friday anyway for training? I mean, it would have been a few set pieces, half an hour, Erik ten Hag sort of boring everyone to death in his usual sort of monotone that he does. And then they'd go and play a bit of pool. So, he should have showed up, Rashford. But, I mean, Manchester United, actually, if you look at it in those wide positions, like I think Garnacho has impacted games more than, say, Rashford has. I mean, Højlund has been over-criticised. I think his performances have been decent. United are not the Manchester United of old, but they might, they shouldn't need to be to oblige at odds of 4-5 against a West Ham team missing Pakatar.
Monday Night Football, the final game we'll preview in the Premier League this week. Brentford against Manchester City, 15-2. Brentford, 10-3. The draw, 2-5. Manchester City. Erling Haaland back, came on as a substitute, Mark. How much of a difference will that make?
It should be a massive one, really, for Man City, because Alvarez is a fantastic forward who is more than capable of leading the line. He's just not quite Erling Haaland. And whether that means they both play or you bring one off the bench, you know, I was there last Friday when Spurs played Man City, and you know, City were the better side, there's no doubt about that, and deserved to go through. But when De Bruyne came on, like here we go. And that's what it'll be like if they're bringing on Haaland in this game, or if they're bringing on Alvarez, or if it's Grealish, or if it's Foden, or if it's Bernardo Silva, whoever doesn't play. You know, having Haaland just increases the options on the sort of squad front. And yeah, Brentford are getting some players back. And I mean, doesn't it just go to show how much betting is part of the kind of UK psyche? That, I mean, there must have been 30,000 fans singing to Ivan Toney on Wednesday night, "You should have cashed out." I mean, like, for that to be kind of, you know, parlance and sort of everybody knowing what it means is incredible, isn't it?
But they're sort of undertones of bet builders and...
No, anyway, yeah, I was just wondering sort of how far I might be able to take it sort of next week with... if the Spurs fans want to go down that route. But it's obvious to say it, but Haaland makes a huge difference. Ivan Toney makes an equally big difference. You could say he makes an even bigger difference to Brentford than what Haaland does to Manchester City. Let's not forget, Brentford did the double over Man City last season, but I don't see that happening this time.
Yeah, with all of that being said then, Mark, what's the selection for this game?
I'm going to go for Manchester City to win minus 1.25 goals on the Asian handicap. And I know that might make some people's hearts sink at sort of the complexity of that bet. So I'll try to break it down as simply as I can. So if Manchester City don't win, your bet loses. If Manchester City win by two goals or more, your bet wins. If Manchester City win by just one goal, you lose half of your stake. So hopefully that does simplify things somewhat. And I just think that Brentford, they did the double over City last season. The first game was just before the World Cup. City weren't firing on all cylinders at that time. And the second time was when the season, you know, City had already won the league. So I'm not reading too much into the Brentford hoodoo.
Okay, brilliant stuff from Asian handicap betting to the EFL. Time to catch up with Dan Childs. If you want some free football bets this season, we've got you covered. Simply head to racingpost.com/freebets and there you'll find over £200 worth of them for you to use this season. That's racingpost.com/freebets. Dan Childs, always a pleasure to have you along. As always, busy in the EFL at the moment. Team in focus, Birmingham. What a season. What a funny season it's been for them so far.
Yeah, really weird, Jack. I mean, they were actually in the playoffs under John Eustace when Wayne Rooney came in. Won two of, I think it was 15 games under Rooney. Just didn't, you know, change the style of play. Tried to change the style of play, Rooney, but the results didn't come. Had to do it without the help of a transfer window, in fairness to him as well, which doesn't help. And it just went from bad to worse. And then Tony Mowbray, who's come in there, and to be fair, he's a possession-based kind of guy as well, with Tony Mowbray, but he's more experienced, far more experienced than Rooney, and delivering that style of football and getting results with it as well. And he does play, his teams do play with a lot of intensity, Tony Mowbray as well, which kind of helps, I think, in a league like the Championship, which is just ultra intense and so competitive. And the results are coming. You know, he's had two wins in four games compared to the two in 15. The performances are improving. Even the FA Cup game at Leicester, you look at the result and you just think, oh, they've lost 3-0. But actually on the game, they've dominated the first half. They missed a lot of chances. And you look at the final shot count was 19-10 in Birmingham's favour away to Leicester. So there's a clear improvement in performance. Players like Siriki Dembele looks like he's getting a lot more out of him. Jay Stansfield is doing the business for them up front as well. And I mentioned about the transfer window. The fact that he's joined this kind of time, he is able to bring some players in that help his style of play. Andre Dizel on loan from QPR. He's kind of a technical midfield player. Paik Sung-ho as well, he's brought in from the South Korean League, South Korean international with 15 caps. Another midfielder should help that, you know, ongoing transition to the possession-based style. So Birmingham for me, weird season, as you said, started well, dreadful run. I think they'll probably finish quite strongly, and I certainly think they'll not get dragged into any relegation issues.
I was going to say, like, what are the expectations for them now? Because I guess after the start, they were dreaming a sort of top six. Then it's like, oh, can we avoid relegation? Is it sort of just consolidating mid-table now?
Yeah, at this point, I mean, there's so much. I mean, you can say it's a tight league, but there's so much traffic in front of them to get anywhere near the top six. I think that's completely unrealistic. But and if they had a really bad run with sort of QPR and Sheffield Wednesday, I think they are they're two clubs that could go on a bit of a reasonable run to the end of the season. So it's important, I think, they made the change just to make absolutely sure of staying up. But I think they'll do that. And I think longer term, the owners are quite ambitious. I think they will be pushing to try and get into the Premier League.
Yeah, best of luck to Birmingham for the rest of this season. Three selections for this weekend, Dan, across the divisions. Where should we start?
Yeah, we'll stick with the Championship. Going to go with Hull at home to Millwall. Surprised me, this shade of odds against Hull to win this game. I think that's a really good price. Hull have done well to sort of just about staying around the playoffs, despite having a lot of injury problems to key players. Jaden Philogene, who was superb for them. He had a spell injured. Liam Delap as well, another key player, was injured. Jean-Michel Seri went off to the African Nations as well, the Ivory Coast. So three huge players there for Hull that they've been missing recently. And they've just about done enough to sort of stay in touch with the playoffs. They had a backs-to-the-wall 1-0 win at Sunderland 2 weeks ago. And now you've got Jaden Philogene. Sounds like he's going to be available for this weekend. They've been active in the market. Fabio Carvalho is coming on loan from Liverpool. He got the winning goal in that game I mentioned at Sunderland. Brought in another couple of really good loan signings as well. Ryan Giles, I think, is a really good signing on loan from Luton. Great crosser of the ball. Certainly a good player for Championship level. And player I know less about, Noah Ohio, they've got on loan from Standard Liège, just another striker. But he's a Dutch under-21 international, so decent pedigree there as well. I just think it's a bad time for Mill to go to Hull with, you know, players like Carvalho settling in, Philogene coming back and these new signings coming in. Bad time for Mill to go there. They're on a poor run, only 1 point from the last three games. I think they'll probably do enough to stay up Millwall, but they're 13 points down on the same, you know, stage of last season. So they are sort of going the wrong way, if you like, season on season. And the Hull for me here at a shade of odds against looks a good bet.
Yeah, throwing everything at it, Hull. One down, two to go for the selections. Where next?
Yeah, going to go to drop to League One. Going to go with Lincoln, draw no bet, away to Burton. A shade of odds on, but I think this is a good bet. Lincoln's recent form, they've gone 9 games in the league without a win, but don't let that put you off. The last couple of games, they've had a 0-0 at home to Derby, a 0-0 at home to Peterborough. I hear you sort of saying, well, there's not a lot of goals in there, but they have had issues earlier on in the season with injuries. The two main strikers, Ben House and Tyler Walker, long-term injuries, have hardly played. They got Freddie Draper back on loan from Walsall, who was scoring loads of goals for Walsall. He's come back in on loan, not on loan, come back to his parent club, and he's starting games. Joe Taylor's come on loan from Luton. And the two of them, although they're not scoring goals yet, they have changed the dynamic of Lincoln's play. That game against Peterborough were probably the form team in the division. Lincoln actually had the most chances in that game, won the shot count. I mean, that's an eye-catching performance, really. And I just think that they're ready to kind of take off with this new look front two they've got at the moment. And Burton sort of been hovering, you know, enough above the relegation zone, you know, reasonably comfortable. But you're always worried if they have a bad run, they could drop in there. At the moment, they're 1 win in 6 games. Lincoln, for me, you know, it's a good time to go there. I think draw no bet is a decent choice here.
Absolutely, yeah. Don't let the nine games without a win put you off. Third and final pick down for this week.
Yeah, going to go for a little bit of more of a conventional League One selection now. Leighton Orient at home to Carlisle. This is one that you would just, you know, the form book screams out at you, really. Leighton Orient, one of the form teams in League One. No, 6 games undefeated, 1-4 of those. Carlisle have lost their last 4 games. Now, sometimes, you know, the form book can let you down, but I just think the way Orient are playing at the moment, you dig deeper into that run. They've had a 3-0 win at Portsmouth, which is a fantastic performance. A 1-0 win at home to Bolton, which again was thoroughly deserved. They're playing some really nice football under Richie Wellens. Might even be looking to maybe put some pressure and get into the playoffs. They're 11 points off at the moment. Dan Agyei as a striker, I'm not sure if I pronounced that right, but got him in from Crewe a while ago. Came in with an injury, he's got fit, and he's giving him a new dimension. He's so quick, strong, knows where the net is, got 4 goals in his last 4 games. So everything looking bright for Orient. Carlisle, on the other hand, I feel a bit sorry for Paul Simpson, because I think he got promoted maybe a year too early there with Carlisle. The new owners came in around about the November time. He's had to wait till January to sort of get reinforcements into the squad, and it's not easy to do that, even if you've got money, when you're struggling right at the wrong end of the table. So Carlisle in big, big trouble, probably going to go down. I hope for their sake and for Simpson's that they stick with Simpson, because I mean, he's a really good manager and he could lead them back, you know, if they get relegated. But for now, they're struggling. Orient, for me, they look a reasonable price, 8-11 to win at home. That, you know, look a good bet this weekend.
An exciting weekend ahead. Dan, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Jack.
Thanks to Dan, as always. Time to get some of Mark's best bets for this weekend. Mark, we shall start with a bet builder. Where does it come?
Comes at the Emirates, and both teams to score. I think Arsenal against Liverpool. I've tipped the draw earlier on in the game, but I'm not expecting it to be 0-0. And I think that's why the draw is such a big price, because we are expecting goals. It's just, I mean, too much quality in both attacks for it to be a dull game. I'm going to go for McAllister to be carded. He hasn't actually been booked since early November, so he has calmed down and he's starting to behave much better. But I think it's really difficult to stop those Arsenal sort of counters and slip passing that we know they like to do around the box. And as kind of the deep line midfielder, he'll have a job on to sort of stay out of the attention of the referee. And then finally, it's got to be our man. It's got to be Nunez. You were referencing earlier, maybe over 15 shots. We don't need to go that crazy. Over 2.5 shots is the way to go for Nunez. In 7 of his last 8 starts, he had 3 or more shots. And that includes the Arsenal away game in the FA Cup. And he had 10 shots against Chelsea. I mean, he shoots on sight. He's getting better. I think he's becoming a bigger threat. I think, I can see myself backing him to win the Golden Boot next season.
The thing with Nunez is, you know, he's become somewhat of a meme just because of his just chaotic nature. But he's always returning in some capacity, whether it's an assist, you know, even last night, you know, he's hit the post at the, what's he, hit the post four times, missed the penalty, and yet still comes up with a glorious assist. He's always buzzing around. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jamie Carragher said that Liverpool are a better team with Nunez in it. And yeah, totally agree.
Time for a treble for this week, this weekend, Mark.
Yeah. So a couple in the EFL, sort of another grudge match, Oxford to beat Reading. So this game actually starts early on Saturday. So yeah, get your bets on early. But Oxford came back to get a point against Portsmouth in midweek. Reading just lost more key players. So I mean, it's hard to know sort of where it sort of ends for them. Dan Child's already spoken about Leighton Orient, you know, beating Carlisle. And I concur. I was speaking to a Carlisle fan just last week, actually, and doomy and gloomy, and losing players, almost sort of settling, I think, for the fact they're going to be in League Two next season. And Manchester City to beat Brentford can hopefully complete the treble. I just think that City are starting to find their range now, and it's going to be a tough one for Brentford.
Nice price about that, around about 7-2. We've already spoken about it in the show, Mark, but we shall do so again. The nap for this weekend.
Yeah, it's Manchester City minus 1.25 on the Asian handicap against Brentford. I think that Brentford put a lot into that game on Wednesday. There's a fair amount of turnaround to the Monday game. And they've got Ivan Toney up front, who will cause problems. But I look at sort of how Spurs were able to move Brentford around and sort of create opportunities. And if you actually look at Brentford's results this season, and I know they've had injuries, but they are starting to get dragged into a relegation battle, and they're up against the City team that's at 4-9 to win the game. And you know, I think that given how good City are and how much better I'm expecting them to get in the second half of the season, De Bruyne is starting to sort of really come into his own. I actually thought, I'm not going to sort of put up too many 4-9 shots, but I sort of expected City to be shorter, and then the derivative markets mean that I think that there are ways to play City on the handicap for this trip to West London.
Yeah, 100%. What does the rest of the week hold in store? You've been under the weather a little bit, haven't you?
Yeah.
What's your recovery with, like, chicken soup and...
Yeah,
I
do like that. Was it Covent Garden chicken soup?
That's
a very
in the Carlton.
It's a very strong lunch choice. That one had it on Wednesday and Sunday, I think. So yeah, I've had a couple of chicken soups. I haven't got that much planned actually for the weekend. Spurs are away, so I'll make sure I watch that. And no family birthdays this weekend either. I'm going to be chilled out. Jack, who have Norwich got?
We have got Coventry.
You'll lose that.
I went to the away. Would you say we'll lose that?
Oh, they're a good side, Cov. They're a good side. Optimist. And Mark Robbins sort of rubbing it in terms of what you could have had. He's somebody who knows your club.
It's quite the turnaround of Coventry. I went to the away fixture earlier on in the year, and Coventry were absolutely awful. And I see that they've been on some sort of crazy run since that point. It's going to be
a recruitment's good. Callum O'Hare's top quality. Yeah, no, they're a good side.
We've been okay. We didn't embarrass ourselves against Liverpool.
No. It'll be a good 90 minutes, I think.
There we go. Thanks very much to Mark. Thanks very much for Dan. If you are backing any of the selections, please remember to do so with money that you can afford to lose. We'll be back next week for another episode of Mark Mangan's Bets Club.